This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm Don Visser and I'm here with John Pearson, a PhD student here at Manchester University. And I've got a couple of questions for you. How are you doing today?
I'm alright, yeah. I'm good, yeah. How are you?
I'm doing not too bad. So what is your field in physics?
I do theoretical cosmology. So cosmology is like the study of the universe as a whole, and theoretical means sort of just crazy maths and crazy ideas and stuff like that.
What's your favourite crazy idea in physics?
I think general relativity and stuff like curving space-time and how light moves through space-time and how planets move and the curvature of the universe and stuff like that. It's just quite cool.
So how exactly does the universe get curved? What curves the universe?
Right, so the universe is sort of, you can sort of think about it like a rubber sheet almost. And a rubber sheet will sort of bend and stretch if you do something to it. So the universe is the rubber sheet, and the stuff in the universe is the thing that's making it curve. So the presence of matter, the presence of stuff like you're made of and like stars are made of, they curve space-time, they curve the universe. It makes it curved.
Okay, so bigger things curve it more then?
Yeah, so the amount of curvature is directly related to how massive the object is. So it could be really small but very massive, like a neutron star, or really big but quite massive still, like a normal star or a black hole or something. But a black hole is very small, but they curve it a lot because they're very massive.
Briefly describe what the standard model is and what its flaws are at the moment.
Right, yeah. So the standard model of cosmology basically says that the universe is homogeneous and isotropic. So homogeneous means it's the same everywhere. So that means that as you walk around the universe, nothing changes as you walk around. And the second thing is that it's isotropic. So isotropic means it doesn't matter which direction you look, it's always the same. Now, both of those assumptions underline that model, they're obviously only assumptions. They're sort of a guess. They're not correct because you're here. Basically, if you weren't here, if there was nothing else in the universe, then it would be fine. But there is loads of stuff in the universe. But they are correct on the very, very largest scale. So like sort of a few hundred megaparsecs, which is a really, really big distance, this sort of holds true. And so what it looks like on those sort of scales is sort of more like a foam. It's like if you get a sponge and sort of look at it, it sort of looks roughly the same amount of holes or sponge. It doesn't have like a preferred direction or anything. Whereas if you were to look at a galaxy like the Milky Way or something, you'd see spiral arms and all sorts. So you can see stuff and directions and stuff like that. Whereas a standard model says those things don't exist, that it's completely homogeneous. Yeah, so the flaws of the standard model basically come from observational inferences. So like basically you get some telescopes, you just point them at the stars, at the universe, and then you get the data and you pull it through the standard model. And basically what you find is that you have to invent 96% of the universe. So the 96% is sort of split into two parts. One you call dark energy, and the other part you call dark matter. So the 4% which we do know about is just what we're made of. Like it's called baryonic matter. So like the stuff of protons and neutrons and atoms. All of that, that's only 4% of the universe. There's 96%, which we have absolutely no idea what it is, what it looks like, what it feels like, and stuff like that. It just has to be there to make our observations within this standard model correct.
So is there any way of testing for dark energy or dark matter, or are scientists going to try and replace the standard model with a new model that'll work?
Well, I think there's work going on in sort of both directions. So one, they're trying to actually detect dark matter. So there's lots of people building lots of experiments to try and detect dark matter, because it should be all around us. It's just it's very difficult to detect. So they're trying to do that. And they're trying to do a similar thing with dark energy as well. But the problem is there's no real sort of consensus on what dark energy is. So what sort of crazy physics it is that describes dark energy, no one really understands that properly. And the other sort of aspect is to change that standard model, and a lot of work's going into that, and that's some stuff that I'm doing myself actually as well. Like I'm trying to figure out other models of the universe which don't necessarily require dark energy.
Okay. What's your view on time travel, and will it happen, and how will it happen, and how far in the future do you think it could happen?
So time travel already happens, actually, and there's already been time travellers. So all the guys that went to the moon, they all travelled in time, very small amount of time, but they all travelled in time. And that's because they travelled at a speed that was different to ours. So whenever you travel at a speed different to someone else, you travel in time relative to that person. So everyone in some sense is a time traveller. It's just the amount of time by which you've travelled differently is very, very small. So to actually do it properly, what you need to do is you get into a big rocket, you shoot yourself away really quickly, and you come back again. Now the person that went on the rocket experiences less time than the person that stays on the Earth. So the person on the rocket is a time traveller. And so sort of to make that viable, you just got, it's sort of technology, you sort of got to get good rockets to be able to do that. So that's, I suppose it's quite difficult, but I have absolutely no idea when they're going to start doing it. I mean, it's the stuff of science fiction. Like, it sounds cool, but it's quite difficult to do practically.
So what are you looking forward to most in the future? Solving the problems of today, or coming up or finding new problems and having to solve them?
Well, in general, when you start to solve the problems of today, you start to uncover new problems, actually. So when you do science, you don't tend to just answer loads of questions. You sort of answer questions, but while you're answering them, you find out new problems. You find out sort of new levels of stuff we don't really understand properly. So by answering the questions of today, we uncover the questions of tomorrow. So that, which is pretty cool, actually. Like, it keeps a lot of scientists in their job, which is nice. So what am I most looking forward to? I suppose uncovering more questions, uncovering more things we don't understand properly, and then trying to understand them. Yeah.
Thanks, John, for answering my questions today.
No problem.